Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, I am, of course, joined by Drew Dinkmeyer and Michael Gallagher to run through the NBA, highlighting some very important stuff for NBA DFS, season-long fantasy, NBA sports betting, and, you know, just for people who are also just fans of the game, but a good, you know, hour-long discussion on potential trades, the Spurs rotation, the Pistons rotation without potentially Andre Drummond, and for sure without Blake Griffin, and more. Hope all of that is useful and helpful to you guys. Of course, you can always get bonus episodes of the show by subscribing on Patreon, patreon.com/takecast, and you can support the show by subscribing to dailyroto.com and using the promo code Janis, J-A-N-I-S, to get 10% off, or you can simply leave a rating or review on the iTunes or Google Play Store. That is very useful and helpful as well. And now let's get into the episode. All right, everyone, bringing in Drew Dinkmeyer, Michael Gallagher, our Monday NBA show here on the TakeCast. Very excited to have Drew back. He decided that he had enough time for us this week, so he's back. And luckily, I think we have some cool stuff in the association to talk about. Of course, Mike is with us as well, but I want to specifically, Drew, ask you a question that Mike and I talked about last week, which was just the change this year, both in injury reporting, so we are getting stuff way earlier than we got things in years past, and also just guys are more frequently sitting out games. You know, something that Mike and I talked about last week was, you know, like Aaron Gordon, like his Achilles hurt a little bit, boom, out three games. Like, that just would not have been the case, you know, even last year, really. So what has the overall injury environment done to your play this year? What have you seen, like, some of the biggest impacts of the injury reporting and injury monitoring be on your DFS play?
So I think there's just, you know, there's fewer opportunities to try to read the news and decipher what's going to happen, which means there's fewer opportunities to try to create advantages for yourself in GPP play by being a really active follower of, like, the if-then situations. I think it's certainly increased overlap in both, like, high stakes, single entry, three max type GPPs and cash games, which I don't play much of anymore at this point. So I think those games have just probably gotten very, very difficult. I decided basically a year and a half or 2 years ago that they weren't worth my time at the ROIs I was generating in them. So I think it's good for those who are putting money out there to feel more comfortable about what they're investing in, but it's probably the overall quality of the games probably goes down, which, you know, for a casual player, I think that's probably a better thing, because there's probably, like, a little bit more comfort in wanting to play, and there's also probably a little bit, the skill gap is narrowed a little bit. For a professional player, I think it's, you know, likely a slight negative in terms of the injury reporting.
Yeah, I mean, that, so that to me, like, and this was something that Mike identified last week, it's just like the big edge, especially on DraftKings, used to be like, okay, Karl Anthony Towns is at the 9 p.m. game. He's questionable. Yeah. If he misses, the Wolves have three of the biggest locks on the slate. How can I get close to the optimal lineup with leaving myself enough options in the later games that I can get there if I need to? And now, I mean, Cats just, he's announced out at the 1:30 in the afternoon media availability. So it's just like, okay, everyone's playing Rocco or whatever. So, like, that to me has been frustrating as, like, very much a TTP, you know, trust the process style DFS player. Where, like, a lot of, I'm not doing a ton of artistry with the projections, unlike how I approach things in NFL, of course. But so moving on now into some of you know, our more serious basketball focused conversations. Mike, the floor is yours on Sekou Doumbia, who just he looks like he is the new wing answer for the Detroit Pistons, who definitely needed one.
He's probably starting the rest of the season, right?
Yeah, I mean, he is smashed his first three starts.
Yeah, and the thing is, he wasn't even that great. Like, you look at his G League stats, and he's playing 27 minutes a game, 17 points, 5 boards, 2 dimes, under a steal, under a block, 2.1 threes. That's, like, not really good. Whereas Christian Wood and Chris Boucher are, like, 4 blocks and, like, 30 and 20, and, yeah, not that good, but they're just, like, eye-poppingly good, and he really wasn't. He just turned 19. He's super young, but yeah, I mean, with a report today from Chris Haynes from Yahoo saying that Blake's considering knee surgery, which we knew, like, it took
right
really, first week of the season, you're like, okay, Blake's going to get shut down. Like, we knew this right away. So it seems like Sekou's going to get the rest of the starts. Dwayne Casey seems to like him, said he liked his disposition. D Rose talked him up. Everybody seems to be comfortable with him starting. And obviously, even before that, we had the eventual Andre Drummond rumors as well. But yeah, I mean, Sekou's going to get a bunch of minutes. They're going to let him go. The Pistons beat writer called it a baptism by Inferno, which I thought was a pretty good little.
Yeah, what a situation to be thrown in next to Tony Snell and Sfi Mikhailiuk and Tim Frazier. Like, what a situation.
Yeah, and just, like, it's so rare for guys, like, just for season-long people who – or even DFS, guys who weren't even on the radar. Like, we're talking about Sekou getting added in, like, 30-team leagues, and now he's, like, 10-team relevant. And then even DFS, like, he's going to be off the slate, and now he's – everyone's eyeing him because he's going to get a bunch of minutes. But, yeah, they're going to let him do it as much as they can. And then to tie into Christian Wood, it was a little bit of a matchup against the Lakers, but 23 minutes of a Wood, Sekou Doumbouya, and Drummond lineup wasn't used at all, or it was used for like 0.0 seconds probably for like a rebounding thing. So yeah, that's going to be more of a factor. The Wood and Sekou lineup was only used for 24 minutes together. That was mostly a 4-5 combo. But he's going to play two forward positions. We need some nicknames for him. I've seen, like, Dr. Doom, Doomsday. I'm being a hip-hop guy. I want to call him 2F Doom. There's a little MF.
Yeah,
Doom.
I love that.
Yeah, so we need to come up with some cool names for him. But, yeah, it's going to be a lot of value for this dude. Basically, the new Wizards, but they're not nearly as fantasy-friendly, which is how much value is going to be on this list. There's so many other guys we could talk about, too.
So, Drew, this I know is going to impact Daily Roto subscribers and people who use the projections because you guys, you love Christian Wood. I don't know who's in charge of the rates. I don't know. I mean, and Wood has been good, and he's been particularly good when he's been playing against other bench bigs. But what do you think the impact of Doumbouya and the rotation is going to be on Christian Wood?
I don't think it has a big impact on Wood. I think Wood is more directly tied to Blake and Drummond, and it sounds like the Blake situation is resolving itself. And then I think, you know, if Drummond does get traded, you know, certainly I would expect that Wood and Thon Maker would share those center minutes with a little bit of a benefit to Wood's side, just because I think he's the better player. But we like Wood so much because he's been so effective on a per 36 level. I mean, in his career, if you extrapolate the minutes that he's played, which are admittedly a lot of times in like blowout situations and against reserves and whatnot, but he's been a guy that has been averaging, you know, 41 to 42 fantasy points per 36 minutes. And he's a guy who's done it kind of across the board. He's done it with good rebounding, a good shooting, gets steals and blocks, has added the three-point arsenal to his game last year. So I think he's a really interesting player, similar to the way that, like, Chris Boucher and the Swatter Boy, who we've talked about before for Toronto, from a DFS perspective, just a lot of production in limited span. And so I actually I added Christian Wood in that 12-team NFBKC team last week, and then I didn't put a huge bid in on Doumbouya because I think Wood's going to be the better fantasy asset. I think he's just a little bit more established. I don't think his minutes are as secure because I think Sekou, they're going to feed minutes. But also you have to realize with Sekou right now is that, you know, Luke Kennard has been out. And when Luke Kennard gets back, I think he's going to play quite a bit as well. I still think there will be plenty of playing time available for Sekou. And I think, honestly, the stuff that I've seen from Sekou in limited time, I think he would benefit from a secondary ball handler being on the floor because he looks like a pretty active cutter and a guy that's going to do work in transition as well. So I think he's kind of playing with like a hampered situation right now. But yeah, that from a DFS perspective, it's going to be a completely different Wizards team than you're investing in right now in a few weeks. And we'll have to see how the injuries and the playing time shake out. But I think Sekou and Wood are two guys, along with Bruce Brown and Kennard, that are probably going to end up playing a ton of minutes down the stretch.
And I'll add in Sfi Mikhailiuk as well. Really good to space the floor. They trust him. We've seen Casey talking him up as a ball handler more often. We've seen that being used even more in the last couple games. So he's a guy who's going to creep up, going to take a ton of three-pointers, kind of almost even more so than like a Duncan Robinson role, because he's actually going to distribute the ball a little bit, especially with Kennard down. And then Kennard, don't forget, he's like Blake. He's had knee issues all summer. Dwayne Casey revealed back in the preseason that he was dealing with tendonitis in August. It was probably before that too. So yeah, can't really count on Kennard. He's probably going to sit back to backs the rest of the way. So yeah, big, big opportunity. Bruce Brown has really stepped up. Looks like he's going to be the guy. We'll see what happens with Reggie Jackson. I'm sure they'd love to trade him, but we'll see him. Maybe we see a little bit of Jordan Bone down in the G League. He was one of the most athletic guys at the combine. I think he was like, he won like the sprint and the 40, the shuffles and all that. He's just like super athletic. So he should be fun too. But yeah, a whole lot of kind of unknown potential here. But yeah,
Mike, who do you, from a season long perspective, if you had to invest in one Piston the rest of the way that wasn't named Drummond, who would be your guy?
Yeah, it's Christian Wood. Okay. I don't think there's any. Yeah, maybe Bruce Brown, but just like you said, and I get this question a lot. People are like, oh, yes. Like you said, you pretty much hit the nail on the head. Sekou's role is more secure, but you want Wood's upside. This guy's routinely 25 and 12 per 36 with the.
Yeah, I think he's got like top 30, top 40 player.
Oh, upside. For sure. Yeah. Like, it reminds me a little bit of Rashawn Holmes.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Good call. Yeah, yeah, whereas like, you know, mid 20s minutes, but still has top third round value. So. Yeah. Oh, I couldn't believe he was only owned 9%. I did like a midweek waiver, and he was only 9%. Like owned. It was just crazy to me. But yeah, full on Christian Wood season. But yeah, there's a lot of, like I said, I think Speed Mikhailuk's kind of in the next rung if you missed out on him. But and they have some. And actually, I wanted to mention this too. They play the Cavs, and the Bulls. So
yeah,
although we didn't see that big front court I mentioned prior to last night. I think they're going to use it against – we don't really know who the Cavs are going to roll out there. By the way, they just waived two dudes, so maybe we've got a trade coming as we record this here. But, yeah, I think we'll see a little bit of it. But, yeah, definitely it's going to be a whole lot of cheap guys to play. What's – well, I don't have – what was Fee's price yesterday?
He's been super cheap. He was the best play in the late showdown slate, but also yesterday's slate on DraftKings was crazy because a bunch of dudes got ruled out. There was like infinity different ways you could go. I played nice. Alphonso McKinney, who got 4 rebounds and then got waived today. So you know how those things go. Where do we think Drummond might get traded, Mike, if in fact these rumors are real?
Yeah, well, some of them aren't. A lot of people. There was Vince Goodwill, who does great work. He had put a list of teams out: Celtics, Mavs, and a few others. And most of the other team reporters were like, "Nope, that's not happening." The Mavs, in particular, jumped out to me. But it seems like the Hawks are definitely going to be the favorite. We know they're. Lloyd Pierce has to be frustrated with the lack of output he's had from his centers. Bruno Fernando, who's been had some spots, pretty talented shot blocker. He's just terrible. Alex Lynn can't stay healthy. Obviously, Damian Jones is nothing special, despite how he's super athletic. They just need a center. They have some assets they could deal with. Cam Reddish has been a letdown. So I think it's going to start with – they're not going to get a lot. I mean, maybe they get a highly protected first and maybe Reddish. I don't think so. But, it's not going to be much.
The other thing for Atlanta, if you look at their like roster, which I think in general, like spending big money on bigs is the wrong way to build in the modern NBA right now. But if you look at their roster, where they've invested money, they've got money invested at point guard, power forward, and then they've got a lot of draft picks invested in wings that they need to sort out and get playing time. So I think if they were going to choose a place that they were going to spend money going forward, even though it's the least efficient route to it, I think center makes the most sense just because I think they're going to want to give Reddish and Herter and DeAndre Hunter time to develop to see what they have in them. And so they're not going to spend money on bringing someone in to challenge those guys for minutes. So I think center kind of makes the most sense. And obviously, Trae Young, you built that great rapport with the lob game with John Collins, and you can do a lot of that same stuff with Drummond, with Collins kind of on the weak side, spreading out the defense as he's shown more of a three-point aptitude this year.
Yeah, I think all of that. Hunter is a guy like long term. Like I just like that style of player. It's just a matter of him developing a more sophisticated offensive game. This one is not on our agenda, but it's relevant to the Monday night DFS slate, and I like him anyway. So, what's going on with Lonnie Walker in San Antonio, Mike? Where are you at with him? Yeah, and do you think that you think he is like a real thing?
Yes. So we've seen a couple times. Pop has been all over the place. Like early, or I want to say late October, he basically said he wasn't trying. He just piled on. But the last couple times, he's really talked him up. And then after Saturday, he said, quote, he's a heck of an athlete. And he had something else to the group that we don't really have. And I thought, and I've been opining to take Forbes out and put Walker in for months now. So maybe I'm a little biased. But it makes sense. Like, they've run a lot of four guard lineups more often. That's why we've seen Rudy Gay's minutes dwindle. We haven't really seen Jakob Poeltl with the four very much. So I like it, man. I think he's going to play a bunch. I can see him playing. You know, it's the same matchup as Saturday, so you would think that the matchup factor means he starts again. So, yeah, if he has another good – he didn't really play well. It was kind of a letdown. But, yeah, I think Lonnie Walker is kind of here to stay. He's not great permanent upside, but can handle, gets out in transition, can maybe add more defensive stats. We don't really know too much about him as far as, like, per 36 because he hasn't played that much. But, yeah, I definitely think the DNP CDs are over, especially with how kind of poorly they play lately.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they need someone like him. And Drew, they're like, you know what, Bryn Forbes, he's not the answer.
Well, I mean, the Forbes stuff, I think, you know, that was, you know, unfortunately their roster is very much like one of those cartoon boats that has a hole in it, and you plug one hole and another one pops up. And Bryn Forbes is basically the solution to, we're going to play a bunch of guys and start a bunch of guys who can't shoot. And so we're going to need somebody out there that can shoot and stretch the floor a little bit. And that was kind of their answer. I think what they've realized is that lineup then leaves them without very much athleticism from a defensive standpoint. And with already having kind of a limited big in terms of rim protection, they need to try to keep people in front of them. And DeRozan and Forbes, that combination is not great. DeJounte Murray can obviously do that. Derek White can do that some. But they're trying, they just have all these kind of like platoon pieces that don't really fit well together. And they're trying to make the best way of it possible. And I think what they've kind of come to a conclusion on is our best chance is putting as many of our athletic wing guys out there with Aldridge at the five and spread the floor offensively through Aldridge's like 18 to 22 foot range. And then defensively try to improve defensively by keeping guys in front of us more than protecting the rim with Jakob Poeltl. So I think that's what you're seeing now. You're going to see a little bit more playing time from guys like Lonnie Walker, DeJounte Murray, and Derek White. And I think you'll see a little bit less from Poeltl and Forbes and certainly the, you know, the carcass of Bellinelli.
Yeah, is
Bellinelli legit on the team? Is that real? Did you just make that up, Drew, or is he really on the team? I'm dead serious.
Over the weekend because they were two-handed.
That's crazy. I had no idea. That's so funny.
They've been actively giving him minutes this year, and he has been
over dreadful. Lonnie Walker at times,
yeah,
too. Yeah.
Just dreadful. Yeah. It's been wild.
He was missing. Yeah. He's not even hitting shots anymore. But yeah, to your point, their defense has really fallen off. They're 23rd in defensive rating in the last seven games. They definitely need to make some changes here. So yeah. We'll see. I think he's going to get
The thing is, they could have a good defensive backcourt with Murray and White. The problem is Murray, White, DeRozan, you just have no space and to operate offensively. And that's kind of where they're stuck. They're so stuck with DeRozan and Aldridge, with these guys who don't create space and don't defend. Like, it's just such an uphill battle.
Yeah. Don't know. I don't see a great way for the Spurs to fix their roster, really. Like, I just don't see it.
DeRozan was starting to shoot threes like a month ago, but that's gone now. He's had three attempts in his last like seven.
I mean, he takes threes as often as I co-host on this podcast. You know, it's like it's like once every 4 weeks. You know, he's going to shoot some threes.
He shows up when he feels like it. Yeah. Maybe. The Spurs, they need to take a page out of the Wizards book. They have no good players. The Wizards are exclusively playing G League players, but they still have a top five offense in basketball. And Mike, I don't have a good explanation for it. What is your explanation for this situation?
I mean, maybe teams are just taking them lightly. I don't really know how they've played so well, especially against the Heat last week. That was really one of the most stunning games I've ever seen as far as games that I thought would be blowouts. But, I mean, just dudes stepping up out of nowhere. Like, Ish Smith goes off for a career high. Troy Brown played lights out. Jordan McRae just missed a career high on Friday.
Mick Michael Jordan McRae is his official name.
Or I'm Team Orange Mamba for sure. But, I love McRae. He's had his per 36 stats without Beal are great. It's like 20s, 25 and 5. You know, he can do everything. Can, you know, gets his own shot really well. They're using him more on pick and roll. So I think McRae's been really good, a guy I've always kind of been drawn to. But he had a lot of shots, but couldn't make them in the last game. I still think he's going to be kind of the guy while Beal's dealing with this injury. But Beal did aggravate his injury on Wednesday, bumped into Jonathan Isaac before he got hurt. So that's why he missed the last two. But it sounds pretty minor. Like, it's more bruising. It's not like a – it's, you know, it's basically a day-to-day thing. But obviously the Wizards aren't really going anywhere. So, I mean, Garrison Matthews has been just great lately.
What even is Garrison Matthews? Where did this guy come from? Like, what is going on?
He had some good summer league games too. But I don't really know much about it other than what I saw in summer league. But, yeah, he's been shooting lights out lately. So he's been really fun. We'll see what happens with the Sexnicks and all that. And Gary Payton's had some good minutes. Troy Brown, who's been so frustrating, and I complain about this all the time, opportunity after opportunity, he's blown it, but he looks to kind of – he maybe finally got it going. Maybe the injury kind of cost him, but he looks really good too. So, yeah, a lot of value, and this team plays fast. If Isaiah Thomas doesn't get ejected, maybe he could put up some more better numbers too.
That was such a weird ejection, and I had Gary Payton in that game, and it didn't even end up mattering. Drew, give me your Wizards G League takes.
I mean, I honestly, you know, up until like 3 weeks ago, we could have just said, oh, it's basically, you know, they've got Davis Bertans. Of course, they've got a top five offense. If you have Davis Bertans, you've got a top five offense built out already. But they've maintained offensive production without him, so I have no idea. They just keep pulling dudes off the street that are posting like true shooting percentages in the 60s, whether it's Garrison Matthews or Jonathan Williams or like whoever. They waived him, so they won't have him anymore. But it's been wild. And I think what Mike said in terms of teams taking them lightly is certainly something. I think also just with the relentless transition that they play in, I think they're probably just kind of by brute force generating more easy looks than a lot of their opponents. Now, they give up a ton of easy looks and teams get very comfortable playing this kind of like almost, pickup game type basketball atmosphere. I mean, there's a number of Wizards games I've watched this year where I've been like, all right, you know, there's like three guys on the floor that are really trying right now. So I think that's probably what's going on. I don't think it's any sort of like long-term, we should be optimistic about the Washington Wizards. If they can just figure out the defensive side of the ball, they'll be a good team. I don't think it's anything like that. I think they're just kind of lulling teams into bad games and bad defensive effort games on the whole.
But is Jordan McRae an MVP candidate though?
Jordan McRae, I am so because I when I come on here once a month, I have to tout my season long. I tied with a Fab bid for the second time in 3 weeks and lost the bid due to tiebreaker, and this week was McRae. So I was kind of tilting on that front.
I lucked into him so hard. When he came back, he was questionable, and it's a deep league, and I was like, I'm gonna stream him just because it's dry waiver wire. So I picked him up and have held him since. And one of my deep leagues, and I was like, all right.
Those are the best situations in like season-long fantasy hoops is when you pick up somebody who you know is pretty good if they get the opportunity because someone is questionable. Like we did that last week with Gorgie, and knowing Kat was questionable, and then we got a full week of Gorgie, which was incredible.
Yep.
It's one of the great things about, you know, we talked about all the injury stuff at the Open. It's one of the nice things about what's going on is more cautious approach is opening up more risk-taking for season-long players, not necessarily for DFS players, but those setting like weekly lineups and whatnot. You have to be a little bit more cautious with your players that are questionable and a little bit more aggressive with the players who could benefit.
Yep, especially when it's like you mentioned, like clear handcuffs. Like Jordan McRae is clear handcuff to Bradley Beal. Aaron Holiday, clear handcuff to Malcolm Brogdon. Yep. You mentioned Gorgie. There's so, and I'm actually, I have a team with all three of those dudes, and I'm trying to trade them to the guys that don't have them.
Yeah,
just because and they're all Gorgie's. Anyways, it's kind of what I'm trying to work on too. So, yeah, that'd be a pretty cool pod topic or column idea for maybe I'll do that, like top fantasy handcuffs. Anyways, the Wizards are going to be a lot of fun. Definitely looking forward to it. But against Boston should be at home, pretty fun game without Kemba though. Which Kemba
my favorite story in the NBA this season is that Kevin Love told his boss, "You're broke. Don't talk to me. Like, find me. I don't care. I don't care what you do to me. I'm sick of playing with Colin Sexton."
They said they were going to fine him just to get the quote right. He says, "I don't care. I got plenty of money." Like, oh. I in my Slack channel, I compared it to Teddy KGB, like, "A pig back with your money." But because Austin threw up with the cheddar. But, dude, that is epic. Like, it's going to be so much fun. And like we said a minute ago, they're cutting dudes. I think something's in the works here. Nothing, maybe not something big, but
What was the rumor going around on the weekend? It was love for Whiteside. Is that what was floating around?
I didn't really see anything that really I took seriously.
Okay. Because the guy, while talking about this Kevin Love stuff, the guy that I feel like Boston, because I know the Boston broadcast has been talking about it when they played Cleveland, they were talking about the potential a little bit. The guy that I feel like Boston should trade for is Derek Favors.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I don't understand why there isn't a lot of trade buzz around Derek Favors. It would make so much sense. Maybe the Pelicans just, you know, want the veteran presence there, and maybe he's not on the table, but it's a short-term contract. He's been exceptionally productive. And he's not going to play 30 minutes a night, but the Celtics don't want 30 minutes a night out of their center. They want, you know, the mid-20s, and they want that defense. And like that as an anchor to your defense, we've seen what he's done for the Pelicans over the course of the last 3 weeks when he's been back playing 28 to 30 minutes a night. Their defense all of a sudden was good. And so I think Derek Favors should be one of these bigs that should be pursued aggressively on the trade market for the few teams that need one in terms of are making a playoff run.
Yeah, they got like most of, I think with the Laker game, most of their starters were like minus 20 and plus minus, and he was like plus 5 or something.
Yeah, Favors has really changed the game. He's one of the more underrated players in the league. Obviously, he's had his challenges staying healthy and whatnot, but he was really hidden in Utah when they developed Rudy Gobert. And I know you were on this coming into the season that he was a guy that was going to be very undervalued from a fantasy perspective because he gets the steals and blocks. He doesn't hurt you with the percentages wise. It's just a matter of can he stay healthy. And I think for a team like Boston that's going to have some cushion in terms of their playoff positioning and a team that's probably going to need that kind of size in the front court, that would be my number one target if I was Boston trying to make a run this year. Like, he also fits in culturally too on that team.
Yeah, well, I guess we're talking about the Pelicans in a little bit too. This is kind of like a three-headed monster for all these things tied up together.
Yeah,
but again, that'd be a real nice fit. But what would they give up? Robert Williams and Filler, pretty much. Or
yeah,
how can you give up the Time Lord, dude? You can't give up the Time Lord for a rental, especially when they're not even close to the favorites.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that favorites should get a decent, I don't know, price, but I've. He should fit something decent, right?
I would assume that he'd get you a little bit more. I would assume, like, he should get you something similar to Drummond, is what he should.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
But every GM, even the smart GMs, would rather trade for Drummond than Favors. Yeah,
because it'll make their fans a lot more excited.
Correct.
Yeah, whereas, like, Kevin, like, he should get you more than Kevin Love. For sure, but
I mean the Cavs are gonna have to give up stuff to get rid of Kevin Love.
Yeah, well, what was that report like a month ago where the Cavs were like they want a first pick and other GMs are saying no, you have to give us a first round pick.
Yeah, it'll be. I like Kevin Love. I think he's a cool dude, and it's sad to me that we're probably gonna like the last thing that's gonna we're gonna remember of him is gonna be. That 2016 season, and he's basically never going to play meaningful basketball ever again. Like, that kind of sucks.
Yeah. But whatever. Just to go to the Cavs, too. Dante Exum, man, blew up yesterday for 28, so that was really cool. I was sad to see Kevin Porter Jr. get hurt. Sounds like it's not serious, though, but I had really high hopes for Porter Jr. In the coming weeks here, so we'll see a lot of him. Colin Sexton's played better, too, so that's something you can kind of keep an eye on. John Henson, obviously, we love his block rate, so he's going to be DFS relevant. Jetty Austin's been really up and down, so
yeah.
I think really besides the weekend, I thought Darius Garland was playing some of his best ball of the season. He had like a good 6 or 7 game stretch where he wasn't really turning it over much. His assists were up. Still not going to bring you any defensive stats, but I think Garland just looks like a better player, which is not too uncommon. Usually around the turn of the calendar, you see these rookie guards kind of come into their own. So you know, they don't play a very fun style of basketball like the Wizards or whatever, but there's going to be a lot of value, especially with Larry Nance. We saw, like, he, and I mentioned this on my pod, he looks so bad, Larry Nance, this year. So at least we know why. He had that knee soreness he was playing through, so he's going to miss a couple of weeks. But, yeah, just value and minutes to be had all over the place. We'll see what they do with these roster spots coming up, too. Like I said, something's probably cooking.
Yeah, something. This I did right while we were doing this. I saw they waived a couple guys, so they're definitely planning on doing something. And what it is, yeah,
even if it's just to rework their bench, where they rather have McKinney, who's a 3, rather just sign somebody off the street who's a 4, something like that could just be going down. Because their roster is pretty thin up front. And they don't want to play Ante Zizic too many minutes. And John Henson, he really can't play 30 minutes a game anyway. So, yeah, it's kind of wide open.
They're one of these teams that just, like, the Bulls are the same way, where all their backup bigs are centers. They don't have, like, really backup fours. I know they've been trying
to... Well, they're doing it, so they're going to face that problem this week because Laurie is maybe not going to play, and they're going to be playing Thad at power forward, and then, I mean, what else? Like
they could get away with Wendell Carter Jr., Luke Kornet back front
court. Luke Kornet. It's Kornet-sism. Yeah.
They could get away with some of that, but they'll get Chandler Hutchinson back, who they can use a little bit in kind of smaller ball fours. But this is why, you know, Otto Porter was just such an integral part of their potential to being successful this year. Like, they really needed him to be a good play for them to be successful, because they just don't have depth at the three or the four. And we've seen it kind of all year long, where they don't have a lot of different ways they can play. They can only play these lineups that are kind of top heavy on the front court and then really small in the back court. And they've gotten away with it defensively because Satoransky and Dunn are pretty good defenders, but they can't generate the offense because those guys don't space the floor particularly well. So it's just a tough scene for the Bulls.
A very tough scene when you're a team starting Thad Young for any reason in the year of our Lord 2020.
Thad Young was not that far away from being like a productive starter on like playoff level teams. Thad Young's not a bad player.
Like 6 years ago or?
No, like really recently.
He was good on the Pacers 2 years ago. Yeah. That is what you're saying is accurate.
I mean, he started 162 games the last two seasons for the Pacers.
guys older than you, Drew.
He's not. He's definitely not. Not even close.
All right, whatever. I'll walk.
Is he older than Kyle Kuzma? Okay. We'll talk about him a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, let's just do that now because I find this fascinating.
Yeah.
LeBron refuses to be in a drama-free atmosphere, and I don't know if it's him creating it. I don't know if it's other people creating it, but no matter how well this season was going for the Los Angeles Lakers, they had to introduce some drama in the Los Angeles Lakers storyline. And, well, I mean, Mike, what was it? It was Kuzma complaining about LeBron's trainer. Is that how this all started?
It's all, I don't even know anymore. It's all just not, you.
If I remember it, it's that some Kyle Kuzma's trainer said that LeBron was not working hard on days off. And then Kuzma tweeted something along the lines of, "I see no lies," or something like that. And then now 2 weeks later, we are seeing Kyle Kuzma.
Well, I don't even know if that's why he's getting traded, though. Just like from a roster allocation.
Well, yeah, also he's bad.
Yeah, he's backing up two Hall of Fame, you know, arguably top 10 player ever. I don't know. I love AD. But we kind of know where he's at, man. I mean, he's 24. Like, we kind of have a pretty good sample on him. Same age as Kat, same age as Jabari Parker, same age as Zach LaVine. And, I mean, we have a much more clear identity on these guys. But, yeah, I mean, pretty much Kuzma is universally – I mean, well, he's – I wouldn't even call him overrated because everyone thinks he's overrated, so he's not really that overrated, right? So, I don't know what they're going to get back. Like, this whole Mark Stein thing just came out with Bogdan for Kuzma. Like, why on earth would the Lakers not do that? Like, they'd do that in an instant. Like, it would fill a huge hole where they need their second unit. Like, if they could even – I don't even know what else they'd have to – give up. Like, if I'm the Lakers, I would do that in the first. If they could make that work, like, no brainer, right? I mean,
what is a first round pick even worth to the Lakers at this point?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, just let it go.
I think I want more. Yeah, I don't even know what else.
Yeah.
Yeah, but get that done. I mean, the Kings obviously aren't going anywhere. They're going to have a tough time signing him after the money they gave to Harry B and obviously Buddy. So. Yeah, it seems like he's going to be gone. So I don't even know if he got traded to the Kings, if Kuzma could even have decent value, just because, you know, Fox and Hield, there's not going to be much uses to go around. Because he was kind of valuable last year, but that was when LeBron was down. So, yeah, it's going to be kind of – I don't really see him – and he's not really great. Like, he's okay for DFS, but season long, he's not really good. But, yeah, you just – and it made no sense. We knew this all along that – and by the way, the, they've gotten a lot of good minutes from their centers too. Like both JaVale and Dwight, they had what 20 plus blocks yesterday. Three guys had five or more blocks last night. Really fun game to watch against Detroit, but yeah, he's gone, dude. I don't really see any reason to even they almost didn't even play him with this ankle issues
yeah,
he's had this year.
He's big time gone. And the funniest thing I've seen on Twitter this year as it pertains to the NBA is Kuzma going up and trying to talk to Lonzo after the game the other night, and Lonzo is just like, literally, I'm not talking to you, dude, and just like turned away from him as Kuzma tried to go and hug him. So, Drew, Kyle Kuzma.
And I just got just reading a report here from James Hamm, like literally just came out. It says that the Kings are unlikely to do a Kuzma for Bogdan swap. So, I mean, that's leaked from like, that's leaked from the Kings, but yeah.
What the hell would the Kings even be interested in Kuzma?
I have no idea.
Like the Kings do like an occasionally sharp thing, like the Rashawn Holmes thing, and you're like, oh, maybe the Kings have figured this stuff out. And then like that, you get this report. It's like, oh, they were going to max Zach LaVine. Oh, they're going to do this. It's like, wait, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why Kuzma? You randomly signed Bielitsa. You trade for Harrison Barnes. Like you're just stockpiling all of the same terrible player. Like, what are you doing? None of it makes any sense whatsoever, let alone the fact that they were, like, once they discovered that they had, like, Holmes, they were like, oh, we got this guy. Now I guess we got to play Bagley at the four. And now they're going to go out and get more fours? I don't understand.
Davis and I had mentioned it. Would they trade Holmes? Because you could get a lot for him.
We talked about Holmes last year being like, that dude, he could get you a first, probably.
Oh, legit first. Maybe multiple firsts with a cheap contract on a contending team. Like, he's like an ideal backup big man on a good team. Great team.
Yeah, they should trade. They should trade Holmes. The challenge is obviously whenever you're trying to trade a center, there's just so few teams in the market.
Yeah.
Because there's just too many centers in the league in general that can play, and there's not enough spots. So like when you look at teams that could like really use the center help, you're down to like, okay, there's Boston, maybe Dallas. You could talk about, I guess after that, you know, where do you go? Like
we talked about Boston was
the Charlotte. Point.
Yeah,
they're probably not like Atlanta, but that like Atlanta in the Drummond thing, it kind of makes sense, I guess, because of long-term build stuff. But there's just not that many teams that need centers. Like that's the challenge when trying to trade a center and actually get anything for them.
I guess it just is one of those things.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, it feels like the Lakers are just going to think Kuzma's way better than he is,
The one thing that I'll give credit to with the idea of pursuing Kuzma is like as hard as like we rag on him or whatever, pretty much everybody that's gotten out of LA has gotten better.
Gotten better, yeah.
Yep.
And like by a decent margin. So maybe there's some talent there that could really be unlocked. Yeah. Oh God, I was just gonna say, you know, a team that I like wouldn't mind going after Kuzma would be like Phoenix, but what the hell are they doing playing Ayton at the four now?
They're getting buckets is what they're doing.
Yeah, they played pretty well.
They played well together, man.
Yeah.
We're heading back to 1993, bro.
This is not a long-term strategy. This is not a good idea.
Bring back Theo Ratliff. Power forward minutes.
So this is actually a good transition point because Lonzo Ball is turning into a like ball dominant scoring guard, over 20 points, back-to-back games for the first time in his career, then three games in a row for the first time in his career. Where are we at with Lonzo, Drew? You by the way, long-term, Lonzo Ball lifetime.
I have been, and it hasn't paid off at all. So you would think like a three-game stretch would be all I'd need to get super excited again. But I mean, I'm really disappointed. I really thought that he had made substantial improvements to his jump shot based on the form and stuff during the year. He's basically shooting at the same exact clip that he was before. The improvements of late have been a little bit due to him just attacking the rim a little bit more, which I think is a really important part of his game just because he does have the size to be an aggressive guard that can get into the rim. And he's got obviously the playmaking on the passing side of things to be very disruptive there. I'm not sure he has the handle to be consistent at that level. And so I think he's benefited of late from some softer matchups. we'll see if he can continue to improve there, but he's always had the passing and he's always had the defense and the rebounding. It's just how good of an offensive player can he turn himself into? I thought the shooting adjustments would maybe unlock some of that this year. It has not at all. So the next pass to doing that would be to try to be a player that can get to the paint a little bit more consistently. But I personally think he would need to improve his handle quite a bit to get there.
He's been honest. He's been, like you said, scoring more. He's been unassisted more lately. He's not even really doing much in transition, which I thought would be where he's at his best. But that's actually down over this hot stretch. But, he's been playing great, really every which way. Just coming off screens much sharper. Usually, it feels like he would just take a screen and just let it, set there and, reset to look for somebody to pass to. Yep. But he's actually kind of getting downhill and getting to the basket. So, yeah. And I was kind of Team Lonzo, but late rookie season before he got hurt, and then all the injuries really derailed his whole season. But I mean, he looks so good. I think that people who wrote him off probably want to reconsider. And I mean, for fantasy, he's just a moneymaker because he can do so many different things. So
the challenge is it depends on the league format that you're in. But if you play in nine cats, he's such a drain. He can be such a drain on turnovers and free throw and field goal that at least now that he's taking, if he takes better shots and just takes fewer shots, then he won't hurt the field goal as much. The free throw is always going to be a problem, but the ability to generate steals, blocks, boards, assists is huge.
Yeah, but he's only going to the line once, a couple times a game, so it's not going to really destroy you.
Yeah.
But,
The challenge is it's a give or take, right? The more aggressive he gets offensively, eventually it's going to transition into more free throws.
Yeah, but it's pretty disheartening that he's only 53% from the line this year. That can't happen for a guard, especially if you want to attack.
I totally bought into all this stuff that his shot was changed and everything, and literally nothing has changed. He's the exact same shooter across the board. And
dude, but he looked so good in the gym, though. I know. How good did those shots look, Drew? They looked pretty good.
Against chairs.
I guess it's all relative, right? It's like when you get, you get your best makeover and everybody's like, oh, you look incredible. And then here we are a few months later. You're like, that person was kind of what they were.
Yeah.
So the last thing, we got to talk about the Pels as a whole because Mike, it seems like we might be getting Zion back.
I think so. So we don't really know too much. He's starting to go through some practice, and it sounds like we're going to get him a few more practices, but it sounds like at some point this month he's going to be out there, which is going to be just so great because Zion the preseason was just the ultimate guy to watch. So, we talk about this all the time. I know Drew hasn't really been on, but we had the I'll ask Drew first. So OKC is the seventh seed, right?
Yeah. Then there's just a pile of slop.
Yep. So that I've always hoped that the Pelicans could kind of get going, and they're only three out, and they're really playing the best ball of the bunch. Besides that tough game to the Lakers, and they've won the other four, if I remember. So they're playing much better, but. Mentioned favors. Drew Holiday's out, by the way, for the next one. Obviously, Lonzo's going to be Chalk City. But we'll see some more Josh Hart, maybe some Frank Jackson as well. But, I'm always a Pelicans guy. So I think I still would probably – and I said this last week, too. If I could make a bet the Pelicans win the 8 seed, whatever it would be, plus 500 or whatever it would, I would make that bet.
Yeah, I think Zion is going to be such a difference maker that if they do decide to push, I think the question is of that group, who's going to try, right? Who's going to try for that eighth seed? I think we know Portland is. We know Phoenix is. I think we know Sacramento is. I think the Pels are up in the air. I think Memphis is a little up in the air, though they're the team that I would most like to because I just love watching Memphis. And I think Minnesota is up in the air because Minnesota, there's these rumors about Kat starting about now. So it'll be very interesting to see who kind of pushes through. And I think it's very important that New Orleans hangs within a game or two over the course of the next week that, before Zion comes back, that it encourages them to bring Zion back. I think if they lose four or five in a row, it might be a situation where they're hold off, let's pump the brakes or let's take it really easy on Zion. And obviously they're going to manage him on his way back. But I think what we really want to see is we want to see the last few months of knowing we're going to get, 26 to 30 minutes from Zion on a nightly basis. And I don't think we'll get that unless they do feel like they have something to chase in terms of that eighth seed.
I mean, that eighth seed, no one wants it. No one in the Western Conference actually wants the 8 seed. Like it's like Drew, you wouldn't know this because you have never come on the show anymore. But literally every episode, Mike and I are like, "Well, who is actually going to win the 8 seed?" But the craziest part is that the Thunder look like they're like a lock for not the 8 seed, but the 7 seed. It looks like they're just gonna get the 7 seed with no good players.
Yeah, I mean, you got to hand it to the Thunder, making one of the greatest trades in the history of the NBA, getting rid of Russell Westbrook and getting a bunch of picks to take a better player in Chris Paul. Like, you got to feel as a Thunder fan, Davis, you have to be thrilled. I mean, this team is looking great, won 5 in a row, 9 of their last 10. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander looking like a stud. You're going to make the playoffs this year. You got all these picks coming. You got to be thrilled with the results of this Russell Westbrook trade.
So, I guess where I'm at with this is that when I was in college, I watched every Thunder game. I watched the regular season.
For those of you who can't see the visual medium that we have, Davis is literally sinking into his jacket. The jacket is like halfway up his face. He's so embarrassed to discuss the way he feels about this Chris Paul trade.
So the point I'm making is that I used to watch every Thunder game. I'd watch the preseason games. I'd watch every night on Fox Sports Midwest. And now I don't. I'm an adult. I got dogs. I got hobbies. I don't watch every Thunder game. I probably watch 40% of Thunder games. And I guess I would rather them have players I actively hate when I'm not watching the team. Like, it's fine for them to have Chris Paul on the roster if I'm not watching them as much. And by the time I start watching them every single night again, I would like for Chris Paul to not be on the team and for them to turn these Paul George draft picks. I guess, Drew, I should really be rooting against the Clippers forever, right? Like, I want the Clippers to go full Brooklyn Nets. Yeah, probably won't happen though.
That's it's probably not going to happen, but that's definitely what you're rooting for. And you never want to root for, I mean, the path to that happening would be, you know, Kawhi's legs just not holding up. But nobody wants to root for that.
But yeah, Shai, so, 2 weeks in a row, Shai went off. He wasn't quite as good this last week compared to 2 weeks ago, but last 8, 26 points on 54% from the field, 42% from 3, 86% from the line at 5 attempts per game. The steals are back. 2 steals per game. Yep. That's what we really need for fantasy. He's been like top 10 over the stretch for season long, but yeah, just total craftiness. You know, not even scoring in isolation, scoring off screens. Just everything we saw in the preseason just totally clicked. So I'm just so pumped to see Shai balling out after really a month long slump, maybe even a month and a half. He just looks so awesome. And someone, one of my Twitter followers said he traded away Shai for Al Horford.
Oof.
Yeah, oh. that's a tough one. But, yeah, 26 usage rate over the span. This is what we thought, you know, mid-20s and close to 60 true shooting. He's been just awesome.
Shai, he's a superstar, man. He's a superstar. Yeah. Daily Roto knew before everyone else knew. Tell him, Drew.
I mean, lots of people in the draft Twitter world. Yeah. We're all over that, so I won't take
lots of people. Lots of people in the projection world didn't know. The haters doubted your SGA projections, Drew. They did. I mean, because I was one of them.
Look, there's always going to be somebody to nitpick on our projections. That's the way when you run a projection site, it goes. There's always going to be somebody to tilt and for someone to tell us that the math is wrong on and. Then 20 games later, them to tell us that the math is wrong the other way, that we're not high enough on them. That's usually the way this goes.
Yep.
So last thing I want to talk about, 76ers. They are now down to the 5th seed in the East, and we're starting to get the reports of, like, Al Horford's feeling grumpy, Embiid's taking time off, which is actually probably, I would say, in the long run, it's good for them. But, you know, Simmons still not shooting. Just, like, I think that the theory behind the team was really interesting. Drew, I just think it's too hard for a team that literally plays with no shooters to be a really good NBA team in 2019-20.
I think that this is a team that, you know, we've seen this before where, you know, there's been certain like NBA champion teams that like they hated one another. They just didn't talk to each other at all. And it seems like this 76ers team is a team that just doesn't really like each other. Like Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid have always had this thing where they're like, oh yeah, you know, we don't need to hang out off the floor to really mesh on the floor and different things. And it seems like, you know, they're 16-2 at home They're 7-12 on the road. It seemed like you just get them where, you know, they have to kind of, you know, stay in the same hotel and kind of be close to each other. But when the chips count, you know, in the playoffs, I still think this team is going to be an absolute force to be reckoned with. I think they're bored by the regular season. You see it with inconsistent effort. You see it on like Christmas Day when they blow out or handle Milwaukee with kind of ease, what they can accomplish. And then, you know, in the regular season, they lose to like the Wizards. Like they, I just think they're like not a motivated team. And I think during the course of this time of the year, you know, we saw this kind of last year with the Celtics where they went through some of this stuff. The difference is I don't think the Celtics had the top end talent last year to fade chemistry hard. I think Philadelphia does. So I'm still a believer in Philadelphia. I still think, you know, I think it's a very clear top five in the East until we see what happens with Indiana when Oladipo comes back and what he looks like. And I still think the 76ers are going to be, outside of Milwaukee, the toughest out in the playoffs.
And I mean, the Houston game, like Embiid looked kind of bad. Like, he didn't look like himself. I mean, I wanted to look this up, but I didn't have the time. Like, how many centers have season highs on Embiid? Like Capella did. Just got really beat down on pick and rolls. So I'm not sure if he's not healthy, like you said, maybe disinterested or whatever it is. But they definitely don't look right. But it's kind of crazy what a difference 2 weeks make when, like you said, they destroyed the Bucks, and then now they just can't get any games under control. Like the Indiana loss was bad, and but Miami game wasn't a bad loss, but they definitely could have had that one too. So I'm with you though. Like they're so talented. Ben Simmons has really stepped up his game. We're bashing him beating the Horford thing, but Ben's been terrific this season, despite how he doesn't shoot or whatever. Yeah. But Josh Richardson's been a little bit of a letdown. Their bench has been okay. Like Mike Scott had some moments, so.
I think the biggest thing for me on Richardson is he's still trying to play the same way that he played in Miami, where they needed him on the ball quite a bit more. And I think he needs to play the way like Malcolm Brogdon played in Indiana, where he just really spaces out the floor and can knock down shots. And then in transition is a guy that can be used as a secondary ball handler. But I think they've, you know, because they've staggered the rotation so much with him and Simmons, they've let the ball in his hands a ton, which I think is the right thing to do in the regular season. But I think in terms of the way that he's going to need to play in the playoffs when Simmons is playing like 42 minutes a night, they really just need him to space out to the three-point line, him and Tobias, and create all that space for everyone else. And we haven't seen them play that way a lot. It seems like, you know, Richardson still kind of runs, is still kind of doing all the things to kind of run through and cut in different things on the offense when Simmons is there, and it creates kind of a log jam offensively until they start to stagger.
Yeah, they had compared it. There was like all sorts of stuff that Brett Brown and everybody was saying with the whole, like, you know, kind of playing the JJ Redick role, but we know JJ Redick's obviously way more talented off ball, one of the best ever. But, and then all of a sudden there was all this buzz that like, oh yeah, Jay Rich is going to handle the ball more. And like, to your point, that's kind of what they've gone with. So, I still think it's going to click. Like you said, so, I mean, their path would be – if we all agree they match up with Milwaukee better than anybody, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what, they'd have to be the 4 seed, win that round, and then take on Milwaukee and beat them? That's
– I mean, I honestly think they match up great against everybody, but I think Toronto gives them some fits just because Gasol does handle Embiid as best as any of the other guys. But I think they match up really well with Miami – with Boston, with Milwaukee. So I still like them quite a bit. I just think the regular season is just going to be a dull drag for them.
I think Embiid's going to sit out so many games, man.
Yeah. I mean, I'm honestly hopeful that he does, because I'd rather see a fully operational Embiid in the playoffs.
Yep. And yeah, it's crazy. They're only a half a game back. I've kind of crept up on me. They're only half a game on Indy.
Yeah.
Are we buying Indy at all? I don't know how I feel about them. I love Aaron Holiday, but
these teams that they have, like, there's a number of teams like this that have like the old Derrick Rose Bulls syndrome, which is they don't play bad players. They only play above average NBA players. And in the regular season, that's a huge edge because you have inconsistent effort levels, you have inconsistent bench depth, but come playoff time, that's a tough recipe to win games with,
because everybody else is playing their starters another, you know, 2 to 4 minutes more. And now your sixth through ninth guys aren't making as big of an impact on the game. So I think Indiana, like, it really comes down to, for me, to how healthy Victor Oladipo is and what he looks like when he comes back.
It sounds like he's going to have a lot of restrictions on him, but yeah. And they've really recently they played Miles Turner more, but about 2 weeks ago they were really dialing Miles Turner minutes back. But that's obviously because of Malcolm. So basically, they were dialing his minutes back because they were playing Aaron Holiday and going small. But yep. Now Aaron Holiday has to play the point guard spot, so they're going bigger more often now. So it's kind of crazy. Like, that's helped Miles Turner a lot with Brogdon getting hurt. But I don't know how I feel about them as a, even with Oladipo coming back, I still have my doubts, just given what Oladipo said, and still going through contact, what, like a month ago, and he still doesn't have a target date. It's still kind of weird to me.
Yeah.
But if they play Miami, I think they might even get swept. But
Miami's going through a little bit of a rut too of late.
A little bit, yep. But I mean, Bam's just getting better and better.
Yeah,
they just got to turn the wheels over to Hero. I think they just need to let everyone know that this is Tyler Hero's team.
Please,
nice. I love that.
Please, Tyler Hero. Please,
he's so good. Tyler Hero is so good. That guy is good. Awesome.
I don't know what is it. And I feel like it's just big games, he's been so clutch. I want to have to look this up, but I feel like every time they need him to get buckets, you know, early in the fourth, he kind of comes through.
I feel like he's such a better fit for their offense than Kendrick Nunn in the starting lineup, sure. Too. And it's very annoying that he has not usurped Nunn to this point in the season. I think the Nunn story is fine, like, in terms of, like, you know, his productivity, but I'd like to see more of it off the bench. Like, I think that's a better role for him.
Probably a good place to end the show. Everyone. Well,
I wanted to look up Tyler Hero's clutch shooting. He's actually not good in the fourth. It's only 56 true shooting, 71 in small overtime. But small sample on the clutch, though. We're talking not many minutes, but 72 true shooting.
There it is.
There you go.
I buy it. Yeah. Probably his true number's higher even.
It's guy, a small
guy
sample.
Guy has ice in his vein.
And the guy is named named Hero. Like,
literally named Hero.
Of course he's gonna be great in the clutch.
Nice.
So everyone, make sure to check out all of Mike's awesome stuff over on Roto World, all of the season long fantasy basketball content that you could ever want over there, as well as up to the minute player news. Head on over to dailyroto.com to get the best NBA DFS projections in the entire world, the best optimizer, and we will be back next week, and hopefully Drew will be with us.